This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I don't know if Israel can actually get rid of Hamas, but weakening Hamas as both a military and political player could really contribute to that goal.
That's Ori Ner, spokesman for Americans for Peace Now, on the prospects of two-state solution to the Israeli-Hamas conflict. Details coming up. Also, Kenya's parliament supports police deployment to Haiti. And Google and South Africa are cooperating in an anti-crime initiative. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Today we are opening the program with a special guest here in the studio with me, Khadijatu Grace Ahini Kamara, Sierra Leone's Deputy Minister of Tourism and Cultural Affairs. Welcome, Deputy Minister, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So, first, if I'm planning my next vacation, why should I go to Sierra Leone? What will I find in Freetown? And is there anything interesting for international visitors there?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question. Well, I'll tell you first, why should you come to Freetown, Sierra Leone? Because it is the place to be, the safest place to be, and the best place for tourism. Sierra Leone is a small country on the western coast of Africa. When you enter Sierra Leone, the first experience you get is a warm welcome from the locals, and as well as our delicious local delicacies, not to talk less of our beautiful beaches that are so clean and lush, ready to welcome you by the seashores. We also have lots of activities going on this holiday coming. We are planning for the African Caribbean Festival. We're also planning for different other festivals that are coming up. One of the things that we're big on now is local and domestic tourism. And so if you come to Sierra Leone, you'll be able to be a part of our local domestic tourism with local festivals and different events that will be going on locally.
So talk to us a little bit about the, the ethnical, the cultural, the diversity, the religious, the ethnic diversity of Sierra Leone.
So Sierra Leone,
the Creole angle.
So Sierra Leone, we have two religions, of course, the Muslim and the Christians. We all cohabitate peacefully. We celebrate each other's holidays. We do share meals when holidays of anybody's religion come up. Creole is our local language, which is mainly broken pidgin English. It's quite different from every other West African country's Creole pidgin. Because Sierra Leone, we the only country where you use air, land, and sea to enter. We're uniquely different, and we stand out in all that we do. Now, most of the things that you'll experience when you come is our people are very loving. They're very warm, welcoming. They will hail you more than they will hail their own. That's how much they love visitors. And so we're just loving, peaceful country that is open and ready for touristic visits and as well as business.
So now to your trip to Washington, what are your goals for the visit here?
I'm here on a five-day trip. I'm here to receive a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Office of President Biden for my humanitarian work, both here in the States and as well as back home, Sierra Leone.
Anything else that you plan to do while you're in Washington?
Well, actually, I'd want to make some visits to see how best I can use those to take back home to my substantive minister to see how best we can discuss in improving tourism.
I'll definitely be visiting Freetown.
Please
come. The way you actually described it. And thank you so much for joining us, Sierra Leone's Deputy Minister of Tourism and Cultural Affairs, Khadijatu Grace Ahini Kamara.
Thank you.
Israeli soldiers today continue searching Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza in a raid that began early yesterday. They displayed guns they say were found hidden in one building, but have yet to release any evidence of the central Hamas command center that Israel has said is concealed beneath the complex. Hamas and staff at the hospital, Gaza's largest, deny the allegations. Also today, international news media report Israeli forces dropped leaflets warning Palestinians to flee parts of southern Gaza, signaling a possible expansion of their offensive to the zone where most of the territory's population has gone to escape Israel's bombardment and ground assault. United Nations officials have estimated more than 1.5 million people have been internally displaced in Gaza, with most having fled to the south since the war began on October the 7th, when Hamas militants from Gaza attacked Israeli communities. More than 1,200 Israelis died in that attack. Hamas took more than 240 people back to Gaza as hostages. The Israeli bombardment and ground offensive has killed nearly 12,000 people in Gaza, the Hamas-run health ministry has said. However, the ministry has not updated its casualty figures for several days. For the latest, we have reporter Linda Granstein on the line in Jerusalem. Welcome to African News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you, Yahya.
So, what is the military saying about the search of the Al-Shifa hospital?
Yes, the Shifa hospital was the biggest hospital in Gaza, and Israeli forces took over Shifa, and there was fighting yesterday. The one detail you didn't mention is that apparently the Israeli soldiers took some bodies from the hospital. And that obviously has the families of the 240 hostages very nervous. And they say that nobody from the government has updated them on who these bodies are and if they're Hamas militants or if they're hostages. Israel originally said that it had found a laptop that had information about the hostages in Shifa Hospital. And it turned out that there was a photo of Israeli soldier Uri Magadish, who was the Israeli soldier who a couple of weeks ago was actually rescued by Israeli troops in northern Gaza. She was working on the border, and it turns out that the photo that was on the computer was from before October 7th, not afterwards. So far, there's no concrete proof that either the hostages were held underneath Shifa Hospital, which is what Israel originally thought, or that there is this sort of command and control center at the hospital. They did, however, find guns. There was a bag with guns and hand grenades and some other things hidden behind an MRI machine, which Israel says proves that Hamas was using the hospital, for terrorism.
Is there anything known about the leaflets reportedly dropped in parts of southern Gaza telling people to evacuate?
Yes, they're the same leaflets that Israel dropped for a couple of weeks in northern Gaza. These were dropped in the area of Khan Yunis, which is a large city in southern Gaza. The problem is there's not really anywhere for people to evacuate to. As you said in your introduction, hundreds of thousands of people have already left northern Gaza and moved to southern Gaza, placing a strain on the facilities they have there. The United Nations UNRWA, which is responsible for the Palestinians, says that they may have to shut down their operations completely if they don't get fuel. Israel yesterday for the first time allowed fuel in, but it's not enough and they still need more. So it's not clear where these Palestinians who have been sheltering in Khan Yunis or who are actually from Khan Yunis are supposed to go.
And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says that Israel has a clear goal of destroying Hamas's military and governing capabilities, as well as freeing the hostages. So is that the goal of Israel's military operation in Gaza?
Yes, it seems to be. I mean, first of all, Israel believes the hostages are still being held in Gaza, and that at least, some of them are alive. So, but it's been now 41 days, and some of the hostages had medical conditions or were wounded in the fighting. There was actually a press conference by doctors of the hostages from before they were taken, in which they described some of the conditions that their patients were suffering suffering from, and saying that without medicine, they would not be able to keep living, especially elderly patients who were taken, obviously didn't have their medicine with them. So there really is growing concern in Israel about the hostages. And in terms of, you know, getting rid of Hamas as a military power, yes, that's what Israel says its goal is. You know, the thing is that nobody's quite clear what's going to happen after that goal is achieved. You know, who's going to be in charge of Gaza? There are 2.3 million very poor people there. The rebuilding efforts, which if you look at the photos and videos coming out of Gaza, there's widespread destruction in northern Gaza. You know, who is going to help rebuild Gaza, and where are people supposed to live meanwhile?
So what other developments, Linda, are you hearing about?
There's definitely concern about a humanitarian situation in southern Gaza, in Rafah, which is where the aid is coming in, close to the border with Egypt. Apparently, there's sewage running in the streets. And, you know, you're talking about people who are crowded together. It's not clear, you know, what are people supposed to do? There's concern of cholera and other diseases. There's also concern that if this goes on much longer, it's starting to get cold. The winter is starting. You know, how are people supposed to live? Israel says that people from Gaza who are refugees and can't go home should go to Arab countries, especially Egypt. Egypt so far has not been willing to take in people. Also, just in terms of medical needs, Turkey has brought in a ship with a bunch of field hospitals. The United Arab Emirates has said it's going to build 3 desalination plants for water in Gaza, but all of these things take time. And meanwhile, you know, people are facing an acute humanitarian crisis.
Linda Grantstein in Jerusalem, updating us on the latest. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
In recent weeks, U.S. officials have held internal discussions and talks with allies on post-Hamas governance in Gaza and resurrected talks of working towards a two-state solution. President Joe Biden spoke of a future Palestinian state where Israelis and Palestinians can live side by side with equal measures of stability and dignity. Yet there has been little progress on how to get there. Ori Ner, spokesman for Americans for Peace Now, discussed the U.S. renewing its commitment for a two-state solution with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
Yeah, it's an important question, and I don't see how we can get to actual negotiations over a two-state solution now. But again, there are things that can be done. I think that, frankly, the weakening of Hamas, I don't know if Israel can actually get rid of Hamas, but weakening Hamas as both a military and political player could really contribute to that goal. And once you have a stronger, hopefully, PLO, Palestinian Authority, as Israel's partner for negotiations on a two-state solution, you've already gone quite a long way toward a resumption of such negotiations. We have to be realistic, though, and take into consideration that one of the impacts of what happened on October 7th is that Israelis are much less open to the scenario of establishing a Palestinian state in the West Bank. They see what happened with the breach of the border between them and Gaza and say, if that happened in Gaza, what's going to happen once there's a Palestinian state in the West Bank? And so in terms of Israeli public opinion, there's going to be a big challenge. And then there's the challenge of the Palestinian Authority. Yes, it may be strengthened as a result of Hamas being weakened, but it's still pretty weak and is facing a real leadership challenge. So it's going to be difficult.
Jake Sullivan, Biden's national security advisor, said that the basic principles of the way forward are straightforward. That path, he said, included no reoccupation of Gaza, no forcible displacement of the Palestinian people. Gaza can never be used as a base for terrorism in the future, and Gaza's territory should not be reduced. Would the U.S. be able to pressure Israel to accept this vision?
I think the answer is yes on all these things. Some are going to be more difficult, but I think that all of them are attainable. So let's go through them really quickly. you know, Gaza not being served as a base for terrorism in the future. Yes, of course, Israel is that's the basic premise or the basic goal of Israel's current military effort. So, yes, Gaza not being reduced, the territory of Gaza not being reduced, I think is also something that the Israeli government would accept. Netanyahu has ruled out the establishment of settlements in the Gaza Strip, as some of his extreme right-wing allies are trying to push. So, yes, so I think that even if there is a certain security corridor, security zone that would be established by Israel in the Gaza Strip, it's going to be extremely temporary, and there's no reason for concern there. In terms of reoccupation of Gaza, no, Israel does not want to reoccupy Gaza. It wants to be responsible for the security aspect of Gaza in the near future, or maybe not only near future, but there's not going to be a real reoccupation of Gaza, I think. And the forcible displacement of Palestinians from Gaza, that too is not something that I think is in the cards. There are some people in Israel who want to see that happen, but I think it would not be difficult for the U.S. to pressure Israel to not to do it. So I think that, yes, all these goals that Sullivan mentioned are attainable.
That was Ori Ner, spokesman for Americans for Peace Now, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Kenya's parliament has given its support to send 1,000 police officers to Haiti to help combat gang violence, despite a court order temporarily putting the deployment on hold. The MPs who approved the motion cited Kenya's responsibility to assist other countries in need. For more insight, VOA's Pauline Ndiho spoke with Edgar Gitua, an international relations, security, and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi.
Prime Minister Ariel sent out a plea for help some time back, and he's been saying we cannot govern Haiti because of this gang violence and these gangs that have taken over very important infrastructure. And Kenya answered the call, and using through the Security Council, it approved. For the first time, I am saying Kenya needs to send the right soldiers, the ones who qualify and who have tested battle, who are combat ready, who can handle this. If we go choosing through corruption a ragtag team, we are going to come back in body bags, Paul. Kenya will be embarrassed. This is our chance to shine on the global stage to go and show that we can handle this.
The Haitians are okay with foreign troops coming in, but the gangs have made it clear. They have said under no circumstances should any foreign troops come into their country.
There is this gang leader called Barbecue. That's his name, yeah. Barbecue has been on record saying, we will deal with any external force in the only way we know how. Remember, he's been a chief of police. So within his ranks, I am sure he has very well-trained people, militia.
But looking at the politics back home, yes. Is this something that can be settled? Because right now, as we speak, there is a whole court order stopping any further engagement on this issue.
The court issue for me, I am looking at it positively as an opportunity for the government through its attorney general and its lawyers to argue its case and to put forward a case to the Kenyan public and to the whole world of how of its preparedness and how it arrived at this decision and what informed its confidence levels that it was going to send soldiers to go. If Kenya can start preparing on that, regardless of whichever direction the court rules, I have a feeling that will go in a long way in making the Kenyan people more comfortable with the idea of sending our boys and girls across. Because like you rightly said, Paul, if we walk into this blindly and if we think of going to use our African brutal tactics.
That's a good point. Kenyan police is notorious for brutalizing its own people on the streets. Are they going to do the same thing in Haiti?
Now that Kenya has made a public commitment, our president has gone out on a limb and committed himself and said and agreed we are going to send our forces. It is too late to backtrack right now. What we now need to do as Kenya is make sure we send the right police force with the right training, with the right mindset. They need to be told this is not business as usual. We are carrying Africa on our shoulders. It's not just Kenya's problem. This is Africa and East Africa's problem. So let us be brand ambassadors for Africa. let Kenya go and do the right thing, and then anywhere else, any other part outside Africa, if there is a problem, they can be like, let's get those African soldiers. They can make a difference for us. So it's a big opportunity for Kenya. It's a make or break moment for Kenya and Africa also.
That was Dr. Edgar Gitua, an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, speaking with VOA's Paul Indio. Leading global technology company Google and the South African government are cooperating in an anti-crime initiative that's a first for Africa. Under the agreement, the company will exclude routes that go through crime hotspots from its popular Google Maps app. Darren Taylor reports.
In August, after landing at Cape Town International Airport, British tourist Dr. Car Teo was confronted with an unfamiliar situation. Protesting taxi drivers had blocked the city's main highway, so Google Maps prompted him to take an alternate route to his hotel, through Nyanga, one of South Africa's most crime-ridden areas. As he navigated the township, suspects approached his car and opened fire. The 40-year-old orthopedic surgeon was shot in the head and died in front of his mother and 2-year-old son. Police haven't yet established a motive for the killing. Then, a few weeks ago, Google Maps took an American visitor, Walter Fischel, on a shortcut through Nyanga. Carjackers shot him in the face, leaving him with serious injuries. Now, in a landmark deal with South Africa's tourism department, Google has agreed to exclude routes through areas of the country where crime is particularly rife, starting with Nyanga from Google Maps. Cape Town Mayor Jordan Hill Lewis, who helped seal the deal, told VOA he recently met with Google representatives.
You know, I just want to thank Google for their willingness to even engage, because I understand the reticence on their part in years gone by about this issue, given how tricky it is and how sensitive it might be. But I do think that there has been a very positive engagement now, and we actually can get some progress. It's not only up to the GPS apps, and it's also up to tourism establishments. Of course, there is also responsibility on visitors themselves.
Following the attack on Fischel, the U.S. government issued an alert advising Americans visiting South Africa to plan routes in advance, remain on major roads, and not rely too much on GPS for directions. South Africa has some of the highest rates of violent crime globally, with murders, armed robberies, and carjackings particularly prevalent. Hill Lewis says Cape Town, the jewel in South Africa's tourism crown, cannot afford more attacks on tourists.
There's 320,000 people in the city that depend on the tourism industry for their livelihoods. It is massive. So when we have incidents like this, even if they are very limited, because they get coverage on Sky News and BBC or whatever, it has the potential to be very, very damaging to the livelihoods of many Cape Townians. It's clearly in our interest to make sure that visitors here have a safe and fun time.
Google's South Africa director, Alistair Mokwena, told journalists in Johannesburg he's open to discussing the exclusion of other zones from Google Maps.
There's many hotspots in the country. I think when the Minister of Police talks about hotspots, the numbers are 58, and it's not just townships, villages. It's also very, very urban areas. So we take our lead from the authorities. They sit us down and say, listen, we want to, in the medium to long term, look at other parts of the country. We will engage.
Mokwena says anyone searching on Google Maps for a destination that's inside an excluded crime hotspot, the app will direct them there, and they'll be able to proceed at their own risk. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Adrius Regas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.